The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. If you have any questions or would like to become a sponsor of this program, please contact our office at 919-832-5138. Okay, let's start off with the Best Advice I Ever Got section from the Reader's Digest. From America's pastor, Billy Graham's Six Rules of Living. America's foremost evangelist, Billy Graham, passed away on February 21, 2018, at the age of 99. In his book, The Journey, Graham shared principles for living, which he expounded on exclusively for Reader's Digest in 2007. 1. Make it your goal to live at peace with others. Is it possible to do this with everyone in our lives? Unfortunately, no. Even our best efforts may not change another person's attitude. The key is to ask God if we're at fault. If so, to confess it and seek His help to overcome it. Life is temporary and fleeting. We're here for just a short time. We shouldn't waste our days, but live them for God's glory. Avoid revenge. Don't be captive of the past. If someone has harmed us by breaking the law, we have the right to bring that person to justice, both for our good and for the good of society. But hurting someone only because they have hurt us is another matter. We can't change the past. We can only seek God's forgiveness for whatever we did wrong. Guard your tongue. Use it for good instead of for evil. How many marriages and friendships have been destroyed because of criticism that has spun out of control? But the tongue can also be used for good. That should be our goal. When people ask me for advice about their personal problems, which they often do, I always try to give them an answer based on the Bible. Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs. Number 4, never repay evil with evil. Evil is sin. It's a deadly cancer that has invaded our souls. It isn't just an illusion or an absence of good. Ultimately, all evil comes from Satan, according to the Bible. Satan is real, and is absolutely opposed to God. Still, we are responsible for our own actions. Why some people repeatedly chose to do evil instead of good is a puzzle to me, because evil eventually destroys those who practice it. Only God can replace the evil and sin in our hearts and love and kindness. Number 5. Treat others as you want them to treat you. This simple but profound principle, the golden rule, comes from Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. How different our lives would be if we actually practiced this. The Bible also tells us, with humility comes wisdom. Every day I realize I'm just a sinner like everyone else, and I've been forgiven only because of God's grace. Number 6. Practice the power of forgiveness. I adhere to the philosophy of hating sin but loving the sinner. The key is to realize this is the way God sees us. When we sin, it's as if we're shaking our fists in God's face, telling Him we know better than He does how to run our lives. But God also hates sin because He loves us, and He knows what sin does to us. Advice. You have a choice in life. You can either put your stuff in your pockets and take it to your grave, or you can help someone. 8 Life Lessons That Lasted. The best advice I ever got. Treat people the way you want your mom to be treated. That's from a fortune cookie, which is interesting enough. I had a fortune cookie last night. Wasn't that profound, though. Today is the first day of your future. I was considering going back to school for my master's degree, but was put off by the fact that it would take me 6 years, one course a quarter, to do it. I just happened to read an advice column, and the person writing it was pondering getting a degree. The columnist offered this advice. 4 years from now, where will you be? You can have a degree and a better job, or be still doing the same thing and wishing you had a degree. I enrolled that day, and 6 years later graduated with a master's. Marilyn Clark, Jacksonville, Florida. Don't correct everything. One of the daily chores for my 12-year-old daughter Joanne was to clean up after dinner, including sweeping the floor. I lamented to a co-worker that while walking around barefoot in the kitchen, I could feel each and every crumb my daughter's swift sweeping had missed, which resulted in disharmony at home. My co-worker Kathy, who was a mother of 4, gave me advice that I use to this day. Wear slippers. Patricia Bray, Burlington, Wisconsin. Skip the stupid. As a child, I did many stupid things. After one such amazingly dumb stunt, trying to parachute out of my second-story bedroom window using a bedsheet as the parachute, and landing rather hard on the lawn below, my father stood over me, looked down, and said, "Son, you're going to have enough chances in life you don't want to take, so don't take any chances you don't have to take." I quit taking stupid chances. David Kunkel, Tumwater, Washington. Judge not. I heard a quote from the Joyce Meyer Ministries that I live by and has changed my life. You never have enough information to judge anybody. How many times have we assumed something about someone and didn't know all the facts? Lori Sampson, Berkeley Heights, New Jersey. It's okay to hurt. After I miscarried my first baby at 4 months, I was devastated. All I heard from everyone was, "You can have another baby. Get over it. Time heals all wounds," etc. But my mother had the best advice. She said, "Honey, time does heal all wounds, but remember that a scar will remain. All you need to do is take your finger and gently rub that scar. That will be the link to your baby, and you will know that love is all around you." Mom let me know that I wasn't going crazy missing my baby. My mom had the experience of losing not one child, but two. Her second child, 18 months old, died in her arms on the way to the hospital, and the next day she miscarried her third baby. I was her fourth baby. Lois Schwiwick, Innersville, Wisconsin. Criticize in quiet. As a newly minted chief in the Coast Guard Reserve, I must have said something uncomplimentary to another coastie. Immediately a soft voice over my shoulder said, "Criticize in private and praise in public." An older, wiser chief had given me the best leadership advice I ever received. In private. Calvin Kepf, Clarksville, Georgia. Seize the day. When I was 20, I asked my little Italian grandmother whether I should marry a girl she liked very much. She would not give me a yes or no, but rather said, "Summertime, you go back to the store, and you see something but a you know no buy. Then you'll go back, and it's a gone." That was 40 years ago. Since then, there have been two beautiful daughters and two wonderful grandchildren. Thanks, Grandma. Bob Scherer, Clarence, New York. Winning isn't everything. I was a young newlywed struggling with marital issues that seemed huge at the time, though in reality they weren't. So I called my dad for help. My wise father said 13 words that changed my life. He said, "Do you want to be right or do you want to be happy?" Those 13 words became sort of a personal mantra for me and has served me well in many aspects of my life. And 16 years later, I'm still happily married to that same man, Olivia Lowry Cook, Eagle, Idaho. Advice. Your actions speak so loudly I can't hear what you're saying. In other words, don't just say it, be it. Some more best advice I ever got from a few famous folks. If at first you don't succeed, and there's a very fancy teacup sitting on a saucer, and in the bottom it looks like tea leaves are arranged in the words that say, "Failing is okay." J.K. Rowling. It is impossible to live without failing at something unless you live so cautiously that you might as well not have lived at all, in which case you fail by default. Now, I'm not going to tell you that failure is fun, but the knowledge that you have emerged wiser and stronger from setbacks means that you are ever after secure in your ability to survive. Richard Branson. My mother always taught me never to look back in regret, but to move on to the next thing. The amount of time people waste dwelling on failures rather than putting the energy into another project always amazes me. George Clooney. Best advice I got from my aunt, the great singer Rosemary Clooney, and from my dad, who was game show host and news anchor, was, "Don't wake up at 70 years old sighing over what you should have tried. Just do it. Be willing to fail. And at least you gave it a shot." Michelle Kwan. I started figure skating at age 5, and the first thing my coach taught me was how to fall. I remember gazing up with a puzzled expression, thinking, "Shouldn't I be learning to skate?" Looking back, I realized that my coach was a very smart man. She knew I was bound to fall many times throughout my career, and I need to learn how to handle it. Michael Jordan. I've missed more than 9,000 shots in my career. I've lost almost 300 games. 26 times I've been trusted to take the game-winning shot and missed. I've failed over and over and over again in my life, and that's why I've succeeded. Laura Lindley. As the late, great Jack Lemmon once said, "Failure seldom stops you. What stops you is the fear of failure. You will never achieve a deeper understanding of your work or learn the tough lessons if you are liked on if you are liked or comfortable all the time. Wynton Marsalis. My father, a great musician who I'd seen killing himself to make barely enough to take care of his family, said, "Make sure you don't have anything to fall back on, because you will." Advice. An old actor said to me once, "Learn how to nap." Liam Neeson. You have to show up, so why not compete? Venus Williams. And now we have more from the best advice I've ever got. From a commander. Learn to stay in the now. Mark Divine, from the Book of the Way of the Seal. And there's a picture of a megaphone with camouflage painting and a big word on it, focus. In the pitch black, the amount of the helicopter's rotor blades, the sound of the helicopter's rotor blades was deafening. The jumpmaster gave us the thumbs up as the light turned green. I leapt out into the dark. The static line did its job and pulled my main chute from its rig. I counted 1,001, 1,002, 1,003, and looked up to check the canopy. Whew! Everything looked A-OK. Ahead in the darkness, I could see the vague outline of my teammate, Chris's canopy. Something was wrong. I took a closer look. Yep, he was coming toward me. Standard operating procedure for potential mid-air collisions is both jumpers to pull to their right toggles, therefore moving them away from each other. I turned right, Chris turned left, and collided with me. My canopy collapsed in a wobbly sheet. I began plummeting to the earth, picked up speed. I had about 8 seconds remaining on my 28-6-year-old life. My mind slowed. My breathing slowed. Time even slowed. Each second seemed like a minute as I moved through the malfunction checklist. Pull on the riser to try to reinflate the canopy. Nothing. Pull on the reserve chute cord, punch the bag, and rip the reserve out, and throw it as hard as possible into the wind. No good. The reserve shot up and waffled a bit around the main. I'm screwed. I took a deep breath and shook the risers out of the canopy again. Tick-tock. Tick-tock. 6 seconds to impact. My mind was clear and silent, watching, waiting for results. I felt no fear. No panic. I was not aware of the past or the future, just the now. Suddenly the chute caught some air, and then I hit the ground like a ton of bricks. The canopy only partially inflated, but it was enough to slow me down for a survivable landing. I waited a moment and took a deep breath to confirm I was still alive. Amazingly unscathed, I got up, dusted myself off, and marched up to find Chris so I could deck him. What struck me most from this experience was how my Navy SEAL training kicked in, allowing me to perform under extremely stressful conditions. Things felt almost mystical as my mind slowed down and allowed a larger intelligence and calmness to flow through me. I know I would have died if I'd tried to think my way out. Though most people will never face the risk of plummeting to earth in a compromised parachute jump, we all have challenges to overcome. I use the term front right sight focus to describe the incredible concentration and single-mindedness SEALs tap into when pursuing a target, whether they're aiming a weapon at a terrorist, planning a raid, or methodically working through a mess when things go wrong. Front sight focus refers to a shooter gazing intently at the front sight on his or her weapon after lining up the target. When you do this, you remain aware of your surroundings and have your ultimate objective in your mind, but your attention narrows down to that piece of metal just a few inches in front of you. Without front sight focus in your life, you're bound to get derailed, potentially killing any chance of your operating at the highest level possible. With it, you'll easily distinguish high-value targets from low-hanging fruit and maintain total confidence as you move through life amid any amount of turbulence. Advice. You can tell a guy to go to hell today. Keep your mouth shut and see if you feel the same way tomorrow. Warren Buffett. Wear your own shoes. Octavia Spencer. How about a little laughter is the best medicine? And there's a picture here of two Egyptians, obviously at the time of the pharaohs, and one of them is carving hieroglyphics into the wall, and a supervisor is standing behind him and says, "It's I before flea," that's E-Y-E, before flea, except after C. Obviously, he has spelled the wrong sentence. My friends asked me to go camping, so I made a list of the things I would need. Number one, new friends. A priest buys a lawnmower at a yard sale. Back home, he pulls the starter rope a few times, but no results. He storms back to the yard sale and tells the previous owners, "I can't get the mower to start." That's because you have to curse to get it started, says the man. I'm a man of the cloth. I don't even remember how to curse. Keep pulling on that rope, and it'll come back to you. My dad is so cheap that when he dies, he's going to walk toward the light and turn it off. What's a quiet Hawaiian laugh? Aloha. When a man is confronted on the street by a tough-looking goon, he murmurs to himself, I'm toast. Just then, a ray of light breaks forth from the sky and a voice booms out, No, you are not toast. Pick up that brick in front of you and bring it down on his head. Right after the man picks up the brick and knocks out the hoodlum, 100 gun, knife, and chain-toting gang members appear glaring at him. The voice booms out again, Okay, now you're toast. My new diet is to pay people to tell me how thin I look. That's a nice idea. The latest computer anti-theft device, and it's free. Leaving my browser history open in case anyone in this coffee shop tries to steal my laptop when I'm in the bathroom. Number one, why no one can ever hide from me. Number two, Chelsea Lockwood, world-famous killer. Number three, why I can smell fear. Number four, bobcats, world's most efficient killers. Number five, is my cat a bobcat? Yes, it is. Number six, why do I love to fight people so much? Number seven, why am I not afraid of murdering thieves? Number eight, why am I not afraid of death? And number nine, am I the best street fighter in the world? And here's a timely subject in the national interest. As states loosen their marijuana laws, a doctor warns that the drug can be addictive and harmful to younger minds. The medical case against kids smoking pot. These days, it's decidedly uncool to criticize marijuana and the rush towards legalization. So far, 29 states in the District of Columbia allow medical marijuana, while 9 states in D.C. permit recreational use. 61% of Americans say they believe the drug should be legal, according to a recent Pew Research Center survey. But underscoring this incredible momentum for legalization is the misconception that marijuana can't hurt anybody. It can, especially young people. The myth that cannabis, another name for the plant, is not habit-forming is constantly challenged by physicians. There's no question at all that marijuana is addictive, Sharon Levy, MD, tells me. She is the director of the Adolescent Substance Abuse Program at Boston Children's Hospital, one of the few programs designed to preemptively identify substance use problems in teens. Anyone can get hooked, but about 1 out of every 6 teens who smokes marijuana will become addicted, the research shows. One of Dr. Levy's patients, an 18-year-old who started smoking pot several times a day in 10th grade. She dropped out of high school, was fired from several jobs, and stole money from her parents. She and her family were at their wits' end trying to find appropriate treatment in a healthcare system that doesn't consider addiction to marijuana a serious problem. Dr. Levy says, we are simply not prepared for the fallout of marijuana legalization. Yet we don't hear this perspective very often. Why not? People strongly defend marijuana because they want legalization to be derailed. They don't want legalization to be derailed, says Jody Gilman, Ph.D., an assistant professor at Harvard Medical School with the Center for Addiction Medicine. Big money is at stake. All told, the states that have legalized the drug raked in an estimated $1 billion in taxes in 2017. A recent study projected that if marijuana were legal in all 50 states, it would produce $46 billion in federal sales tax revenue and more than 1 million jobs by 2025. Last year, teen marijuana use went up significantly the first time in 7 years, according to a large annual study conducted by the University of Michigan. The latest national survey on drug use and health, completed in 2016, also showed an increase, while tobacco and alcohol use continued to decrease. If you go into a high school and ask the classroom, are cigarettes harmful? Is alcohol harmful? Every kid raises their hand, Gilman says. But if I ask, is marijuana harmful? Not a hand goes up. In fact, more than half of 10th and 12th graders say they believe pot isn't dangerous, according to a report from the RAND Corporation, a nonpartisan research organization. That is an unintended consequence of legalization, Pam Luna, a BAND consultant, said, told NPR. Or maybe it is intended. Pot proponents often argue that one reason to legalize the drug is so its dosage and potency can be regulated. You might compare public perception now to the way people used to feel about tobacco. In the 1950s, nearly half of all Americans smoked tobacco. Meanwhile, the big tobacco companies aggressively use their lobbying power to deceive the public about the harms of smoking and to forestall regulation by the Food and Drug Administration. Of course, now we know that tobacco causes cancer, heart disease, and other health problems, and cigarette packaging carries mandatory warnings. To being balanced to a narrative driven by pro-legalization campaigns, Gilman and others are interested in leveraging data to show pot's real effect. In 2014, Gilman published research on 18 to 25-year-olds that showed differences in the brain reward system between users and non-users. Teens who smoked marijuana had significant abnormalities in the areas of brain linked to emotion, motivation, and decision-making. "I have a lot of hate mail after that," she said. In another study, Gilman found that teens who smoked marijuana daily showed long-term memory loss in adulthood, even years after they'd stopped. Heavy use can result in a loss of 6 IQ points, about the same dip as that lead poisoning causes, according to the American Psychological Association. In other studies, the brain of young adult pot smokers have shown deterioration in the language areas, with more verbal memory decline among those who started at the youngest age. The key ingredients in marijuana are tetrahydrocannabinol, THC, attaches to brain receptors that modulate healthy behavior such as eating, learning, and forming relationships. Over time, THC rewires this whole cognitive system, throwing off its finely tuned balance. Early evidence in mice have shown that repeated exposure to THC causes these receptors to disappear altogether. The results can be lasting and detrimental. Teens who frequently smoke pot, especially young men, were less likely to hold full-time jobs as adults, get married, or finish their education. A University of Connecticut study found, young adults are 3 times more likely than others to drive under the influence of cannabis, which is the illicit drug most often detected in crashes, often combined with alcohol. Numerous studies have shown that its use impairs driving and increases the risk of a crash. Since the drug was legalized in Colorado, related visits to emergency rooms and urgent care centers have increased almost 3-fold among those under 21. It's worth bearing in mind that there was a science that eventually curtailed the power of big tobacco and prevented nearly 800,000 cancer deaths in the United States between 1975 and 2000. As marijuana marches toward the same legal status as cigarettes, its potential hazards will require equal attention by science. The National Institutes of Health is beginning a 10-year study of the effects of alcohol and drugs, as well as screen time, nutrition, and exercise on the adolescent brain. So far, more than 7,000 adolescents have enrolled. The argument here isn't whether marijuana should be legal. There are champions on either side of that debate. Instead, should the drug become widely available, it's to our detriment to blindly consider legalization a victory. We must be cautious when societal shifts can affect health, especially among our most vulnerable. Today's weed is not yesterday's grass. The ingredient in marijuana that produces the high tetrahydrocannabinol, THC, it's also a medicinal ingredient responsible for muting the effects of chronic pain, nausea, mood disorders, and other ailments. Over the decades, some marijuana strains have been bred to contain more THC and less of the substance that lessens the high, called cannabidiol, CBO. Because this THC concentrations have grown stronger, today's weed might well be 40 times more potent than the grass of the 1970s. And there's a picture here of a MRI of a teen's brain that shows an area of red and yellow at the base of the hippocampus. When young people smoke marijuana, their brains change. The red and yellow areas above indicate abnormal growth in the nucleus accumbens, the part of the brain that affects motivation and learning. And let's close out this session of the Reader's Digest with "That's Outrageous." This is not the smartest way to crack nuts. In 1991, a Chinese man received a mallet-like gift. Over the following 25 years, he used to smash open walnuts. That is, until he happened to receive a leaflet passed out by the local police regarding explosive devices. His nutcracker was, in fact, a 1960 era's hand grenade. And what they looked like a regular hand grenade, you see, but they had a wooden handle. Get a driver's license. With examiner in the car, a Buffalo, Minnesota teen began her driver's test by turning on the ignition, taking the car out of the park, tapping the accelerator and driving her Chevy Equinox into and through the brick wall of the examination station. This is not the smartest way to hook up a TV. To find out where the cable needed to go through the wall to connect to his TV, a do-it-yourselfer set the alarm on a battery-powered clock to go off in 10 minutes, tied a string around the clock, and slowly lowered it through an air vent. When the timer went off, he knew he'd know where to drill, except the clock slipped from the string and fell out of reach. 10 minutes later, it went off. That was in 2004. It's been going off at the same time every day since. This is not the smartest way to grab a bite. A New York State woman pulled up to a fast food drive-thru window and ordered a sandwich. That was when she was informed that she was not at a drive-thru, but at the security booth of the Riverhead Correctional Facility, which was convenient. She was promptly arrested and charged with driving while the ability impaired by drugs, as well as driving without a license. And this is not the smartest way to help victims. An agent of the Department of Homeland Security was in Salt Lake City to warn against the dangers of sexual exploitation. After he spoke, he handed out his business card. A reporter later called the number on the card, only to be greeted with, "Hey, sexy." It seemed some numerals on it had been inadvertently transposed, and the number on the card was for a very different type of service. Last week, we were talking about heart surgery and the different elements in Consumer Reports. And here are three questions you need to ask before your heart surgery. Do I really need this operation? When your cardiologist says you might need heart surgery, you might hesitate to question his or her judgment. But asking tough questions is important because the stakes are so high, says Rita Redberg, MD, a cardiologist and editor of the JAMA Internal Medicine. The first thing to know is that there'll be more time than you realize to make a decision. Unless you've just had a life-threatening symptoms, heart surgery really needs to be done immediately. So you have time to think through the options and to make informed choices, Redberg says. And with heart disease, you often do have choices, says Young Shin, MD, who heads the cardiothoracic surgery department at the Kaiser Sunnyside Medical Center in Clackamas, Oregon, one of the only 18 hospitals across the country that earn top scores in Consumer Reports rating of both bypass and valve replacement surgery. For example, heart disease symptoms such as chest pain and shortness of breath can sometimes be treated not through just bypass surgery, but also with a less invasive procedure known as percutaneous coronary intervention, PCI. That technique involves inflating a tiny balloon in a clogged artery to widen the blockage, often leaving a medical stent behind to prop it open. In other cases, heart disease can be controlled with a combination of blood pressure, cholesterol, and other drugs. Talk with your doctors, your cardiologist, as well as your surgeon about these options. Also, be sure to consider how the surgery will affect your quality of life. For example, possibly extending life by 20 years with bypass surgery might be less important to someone in their 80s than to a younger person. An older person might opt for the easier recovery of angioplasty or even just stick with meds. The decision is rarely black and white, Chen says. Most of the time we're in a gray zone, which makes patient preferences especially important. How do I choose a hospital and surgeon? First, check the hospital ratings on the following pages, which we'll run through real quickly, which are based on such factors as survival and complication rates. The data are provided to us by the Society of Thoracic Surgeons, STS, the professional group that represents heart surgeons. The ratings cover the two most common types of heart surgery, bypass and valve replacement, and reflect how well an entire surgical team works together, said David Sharon, MD, Vice President of the Center for Quality and Safety at the Massachusetts General Hospital, who oversees the STS data. If a hospital you're considering has a low rating, ask your surgeon why, how well it did in the past, and what's going to now to improve. If the hospital doesn't appear in our ratings, ask what percentage of its patients die within 30 days of the surgery or have serious complications such as developing a chest infection. If he or she won't share that information, consider looking for another hospital and another surgeon, Shahan says. Unless your procedure is urgent, try to visit at least two hospitals to meet with more than one surgeon before you make up your mind. How can you find the best possible surgeon? You can look up our ratings of surgical groups at cr.org/heart-surgeries. For a specific surgeon, ask directly about his or her mortality and complication rates, says Sarah Piera, MD, a cardiothoracic surgeon at the University of Alabama at Birmingham Health System, a top-rated heart hospital. Also ask about experiences. While there's no set number of procedures a surgeon should have done, you don't want to be among the first. If the doctor won't answer those questions, that's a very big red flag. What happens after the procedure? Knowing what to expect after surgery can make your recovery go more smoothly. Most patients stay in the ICU for one night, which I'd been for me, Piera says. If you're emerging from anesthesia, you might be given a sedative so that you're calm when you wake up and when the staff removes your breathing tube, which can be unsettling. Expect the first few days to be uncomfortable. Even breathing can hurt when you have temporary drainage tubes in your chest and your surgical wound is healing. But within the first 24 hours, hospital staff will encourage you to get up and move around, and after 4 or 5 days, most patients are ready to go home. To make sure everyone is on the same page, it's important that your surgeon or the hospital discharge planner get in touch with your cardiologist and your primary care provider, and that should happen before you leave the hospital, Shahane says. Those doctors who will care for you once you get home should know how the operation went and be aware of any special steps you may need have taken during your recovery. You or someone caring for you should also ask about any special equipment you might need when you get home, such as a shower chair and a special dietary requirements. Be sure that you leave the hospital with prescriptions for all the medication you'll need, often including low-dose aspirin to prevent blood clots, a blood pressure drug, and a cholesterol-lowering statin drug, all of which you'll probably take indefinitely. To manage post-surgery discomfort, you should expect a short-term prescription for pain reliever, although after a few days, you should be able to manage with an over-the-counter one. Over the next 6 to 8 weeks, you'll be asked to gradually increase how much you walk each day until you're strong enough to begin cardiac rehab. These carefully supervised exercise programs, which are designed to rebuild muscle strength and aerobic fitness, have been found to extend lives after bypass surgery. The psychological effects of the surgery, fears that something else will happen to your heart, as well as post-op depression, can last longer than the physical effects. But Piera says that enrolling in cardiac rehab and knowing that your heart is working better than before the operation can help the fear survive. As a survivor of triple bypass surgery, I will testify to that. The percentage of people who die during or soon after heart bypass surgery, the most common heart surgery in the U.S., has been cut nearly in half since 1990. This improvement is even more impressive given that the patients today are having heart surgery at an older age. Let me run through the hospitals in our area that are given very high ratings. The Cone Health Moses Cone Memorial Hospital in Greensboro. Emory St. Joseph Hospital, Atlanta, Georgia. Meditor State Heart Institute, MedStar Washington Hospital Center in Washington, D.C. TriStar Centennial Medical Center in Nashville, Tennessee. It's got the whole southeast here, so I need to bounce around a little bit. Inova Fairfax Hospital in Falls Church, Virginia. King's Daughters Medical Center in Ashland, Kentucky. Lynchburg General Hospital in Lynchburg, Virginia. Mission Hospital Incorporated in Asheville, North Carolina. Rex Hospital here in Raleigh, North Carolina. And Vidant Medical Center in Greenville, North Carolina, as well as Winchester Medical Center in Winchester, Virginia. I'm surprised Duke is not in there because they have a pretty good record, too, but they don't. So, anyway. Well, that particular article actually just finished up the July issue of Consumer Reports, and now we're starting on the August issue. And here's from the editor, Watch TV Your Way. By the way, the title of this particular edition is Cable TV, You're Fired. All of us need to unwind, and for many people that means turning on a favorite show or movie. The choices are seemingly endless. Do I flip through hundreds of cable channels, subscribe to a streaming service such as Hulu or Netflix? If I want a streaming media player, should I pick an Apple TV or a Roku? The options can be confusing, and what works best for me might not work for my parents or my nephew, who have different priorities for their news and entertainment. This month, our step-by-step guide will help you to determine which viewing options are right for you, regardless of whether you're a binge watcher, a sports nut, a home renovation fan, or anything else. We'll help you review your monthly bill, spot sneaky add-on fees, and build a package from the ground up to give you the shows and channels you crave, while saving you hundreds over the course of the year on things you don't. We have the inside scoop on the latest cable replacement services, ratings on the best streaming media players, and tips on getting the most from your cable company if cutting the cord isn't right for you. TV should be a relaxing experience, however you choose to watch it. With CR's expert guidance, nothing will make more relaxing than knowing that you're getting the best possible bang for your buck. Building a better world together. Join with us to make things safer. Working to end robocalls. 15 years after the Federal Trade Commission opened the National Do Not Call Registry to reduce unwanted telephone solicitations, our lives are being interrupted with more than ever, with ever more relentless frequency. About 3.4 billion automated robocalls were placed into U.S. homes this April, according to the call blocking company UMail. Almost a billion more than in 2017. That's more than 10 calls per American per month. And complaints to the FTC for do not call violations rose almost 36% from 2016 to 2017 to 7.2 million. Beyond disrupting our lives and assaulting our privacy, robocalls are also a fiendishly effective vehicle for criminal activity. A quarter of them are made by fraudsters fishing for victims, costing consumers an estimated $350 million in in 2011 successful scam. Sorry about that. They got a weird thing in here that spaces it kind of odd. How Consumer Reports has your back. We believe persistent consumer pressure on phone companies and governmental officials can make a difference. Our End Robocalls campaign, launched in 2015, demands that phone companies offer free, effective tools for blocking robocalls. And the 740,930 signatures we collected backing the effort helped convince several phone companies to offer such tools. More recently, we tested at a U.S. House hearing urging lawmakers to pass the RoboCop Act, which would force phone companies to offer free, effective call blocking technologies, and the Hang Up Act, which would eliminate a loophole that certain debt collectors use to skirt robocall regulations. We also endorsed a New York State anti-robocall law. What you can do, contact your state representatives at congress.gov, insist they support the RoboCop and the Hang Up Acts, and learn to protect yourself from robocalls at cr.org/robocalls110818. What's at stake? Keeping phone bills low. If U.S. regulators approve the proposed $26 billion Sprint and T-Mobile merger, the ranks of national wireless providers will shrink from 4 to 3. What's the big deal? Well, the cost of cellular service has fallen in recent years, at least in part because of competitive pricing. When T-Mobile and Sprint announced unlimited data plans in 2016, for example, AT&T and Verizon quickly responded with unlimited options to keep pace. That trend could easily reverse if the number of competitors in the market decreases. In fact, as CR President Martala Tolado noticed in a recent USA Today op-ed, the historical record on such mergers is pretty clear. Competition is slacked, innovation is dampened, and prices go up. This would be especially painful given the growing importance of mobile communications. American consumers, 95% of whom own a cell phone, depend on wireless service not just for personal calls and for text, but also for business, educational, and emergency purposes, as well as directions and everyday activities like shopping. Smartphones have also become the only link to the Internet for many low-income households unable to afford a broadband service. How CR has your back. CR has long been skeptical of any merger that leaves consumers with fewer wireless choices. Regulators generally agree. 7 years ago, they blocked AT&T bid for T-Mobile. So when news of the proposed merger broke, CR spoke out quickly in Washington, D.C. and in the U.S. today on the potential harms. We are urging regulators to conduct thorough antitrust hearings and a public interest review and to block the deal if it appears likely to harm consumers and competition. What you can do. To make sure you have the best wireless plan for your family, read our service and reliability ratings at cr.org/cell0818. A victory for child safety. What's at stake? For years, Consumer Reports reported and advocated on the thousands of injuries and hundreds of deaths caused each year by vehicles backing into pedestrians, most of them children and seniors. How CR has your back. Our extensive testing recommended that many autos had massive blind zones in the rear areas the drivers can't see when at the wheel. Rear-view cameras greatly reduced the risk, but many auto manufacturers offered cameras only as a pricey addition. Working with a coalition of safety groups, CR successfully pressed lawmakers to pass a 2008 law directing the Department of Transportation to require rear visibility technology in new vehicles. Even then, however, regulators missed deadline after deadline, saying more study was needed. That's when CR, other consumer groups, and families of children killed in backover incidents sued the DOT. In 2014, one day before the trial was to begin, the DOT issued a rule requiring automakers to install the technology. Backup cameras are now standard in every new car built for sale in the U.S. as of May 2018. What can you do? Check out the latest auto safety coverage at cr.org/car safety and our auto ratings, which factor in safety data, at cr.org/cars. Now let's do letters from readers. You're never alone in your car. Our June 2018 issue, we reported on the quickly evolving technology of self-driving cars, which fueled a high-octane discussion about safety on our roads. To join the conversation, go to cr.org/self-driving0818. The article Safer Self-Driving Car says, "This tragedy of the pedestrian death by an Uber self-driving car makes clear that they have a long way to go. This implies that self-driving cars shouldn't be deployed until they achieve perfection. Self-driving cars will never be 100% perfect. There will always be unfortunate accidents. What's important is that self-driving cars will reduce accidents. How many pedestrians were killed last month by cars that did not have self-driving capabilities? The faster self-driving cars are widely available, the faster we will significantly reduce collisions. One tragic accident is not reason to question or delay self-driving programs." Lawrence Crome, Englewood, Florida. Until the average performance of self-driving cars regularly exceeds that best performance human can muster, these cars are not ready to replace human drivers at all. That doesn't mean we should simply wait until humans drive so ineptly that the self-driving car becomes the better option. Of all the people teaching self-driving cars to drive, I wonder how well they drive. It would seem preferable to model the driving style of the best drivers, many of whom would be honored to make the future safer. Loris Hills Rosario, Forest Hills, New York. When we are evaluating whether when to allow self-driving cars on our roadways, we should compare the potential safety record against the current human safety record, and not on an absolute scale. I'd rather be driving with computer-controlled cars than human-controlled cars if I have a lower chance of being killed or seriously injured. James Sakura, San Diego. About safe driving cars and a request by CU to contact my senator on the AW START Act. While the Uber self-driving car pedestrian death is sad, how many other pedestrians occurred on that same day by cars that were driven by regular drivers? Do self-driving cars have to be perfect? They should simply have better where better needs defined, e.g. miles driven per pedestrian deaths. Jim Bohm, Centerport, New York. I have a 2017 Subaru Forester with EyeSight, driver assist technology, and feel that such safety devices should be lauded, not dissed as an unnecessary duplication of human effort and an excuse to relax one's attention in the driving task. The main reason I bought the Forester was to take advantage of any driving assist mechanisms that is available. At age 73, I still enjoy excellent EyeSight and have no physical impairments, but I welcome any technology that offers a safer commute. Russell Hughes, Traveler Rest, South Carolina. In your piece, your statement that they have a long way to go unfairly denigrates the technology. With additional use and investment, self-driving cars will get increasingly safer. Instead of pushing legislation that can only slow down adoption and dry up funding, shouldn't we be pushing hard for laws and enforcement of existing laws to get bad drivers off the streets? I would think a punishment that repeat offender can only drive in a self-driving car would attack both sides of this problem, or install a device that monitors and reports bad driving and behavior for review. Let's get our priorities straight instead of thwarting the very technologies that could solve the problem. Scam Savvy. Ray, protect yourself from these 7 scams, June 2018. I almost fell for a scam that used the name of a friend I had not been in contact for a while. The story was that they were traveling in the UK and had all their money and ID stolen. I was just about to send around $1,200 U.S. Before sending, I decided to verify that this is for real. I asked a question about a mutual friend, a no-brainer for my friend, but it exposed the scammers when they failed to supply the right answer. Joe Hablin. My late husband recorded a message along the lines of, "Thank you for calling. All of our family members are busy helping other telemarketers. Please hold, and the next available family member will assist you." I just hold up that up to the phone. Oh, and that includes music from a horrible opera. Marisa Elston via Facebook. The tower of my new Dell computer had finally been delivered as we were eating lunch. Then the telephone rang. I answered and a voice said, "We're calling to inform you that your new Dell computer has been hacked." I replied, "Great. How can you tell? It's still in the box." There was silence. The caller hung up. Gilbert Neal, Virginia. My favorite scam story happened when I was still living with my parents. One night I answered the phone, and the person said, "Hello, Mr. Timmons. This is Sergeant X of the Lynn Police. We have your son Stephen in custody at the station." I then replied, "Are you sure it's Stephen? Can you describe him?" So the sergeant then gave me a description. I then replied, "Sorry, but that sounds nothing like me. Goodbye, sir. Steve Timmons," via Facebook. Car privacy concerns. In his article, "You're Never Alone in Your Car," June 2018, Jeff Plungis did a great job outlining the benefits of connected car, as well as potential car company privacy invasions. Surprisingly, though, I found no mention of a critical issue that can affect connected cars, hacking. This is a serious threat because hackers can not only invade your privacy, they can also shut down critical safety systems or even the vehicle itself. Elliot Friedman, Jacksonville, Florida. Enjoyed your article on car connectivity. Should I tape over the driver's camera like we do our laptops? Eugene Radish. Editor's note, we don't know of any cameras that are recording images yet. Automakers say they're currently more like garage door sensors that detect movement rather than video cameras. General Motors uses its cameras to ensure that the driver is paying attention to the road so that hands-free Super Cruise can be engaged. There's also no need to tape over it for the time being. In fact, doing so could compete a safety feature or other functionality of your car. Smartphone protection. About your "Is smartphone insurance worth buying?" in the June 2018 issue. My wife and I stepped into the smartphone world 2 years ago with a pair of Samsung Galaxy S7 phones. We decided to forego the purchase of the protection plan offered, but instead we both got OtterBox covers and Zag Glass lifetime warranty screen protectors. This was much less expensive. The only downside is that the OtterBox makes the phone a bit bulkier. In your article about cell phone insurance, you omitted the best insurance, a case and screen protector. Good cases are available for under $100 and a screen protector starting at $5. A Ziploc bag when walking on the beach or boating provides additional protection. Editor note, similar to your zip-closed bag trick for boating and beachgoing, some companies now make clear waistband belts specifically designed to hold your phone, similar to an old-school fanny pack. You can find them online for about $10. Neutrality talk. CRs presented the essential problem in the matter of net neutrality and a fair and open interest. Building a Better World Together, 2018, June. The contrast and non-alignment between public interest and the federal bureaucracy could hardly be more stark. U.S. senators from governors and governors of multiple states, the voices of the people, are acting both in unison and in parallel to undo the work of a board of unelected bureaucrats implementing a whim of one administration that favors big businesses, big donors, at the expense of citizens. Bully for CR and its ongoing effort to further the case of net neutrality. Howard Ritter in Fuquay Varina, North Carolina. My family and I have been subscribers and supporters for decades. I noticed in the most issue of CR that again took a prominent stand on net neutrality. I believe you are oversimplifying the issue. Advocating for net neutrality is not automatically pro-consumer. The issue of battle between two major industries over regulation to where the profit flows. Distribution players want to be able to manage their networks and have more control to maximize their business. Yes, that means differentiating traffic prioritization. But it's dishonest to ignore that content companies do the same thing. They also prioritize and select what content is provided. I wish that CR would think through the stronger policy justification for regulating one industry, but not the other. T. Augustin, Stanford, Connecticut. What we're testing in our labs. In our 63 labs, we continue to review and rate products. Here are timely picks for this month. Smart speakers. We tested 19 models. We test for sound quality of the speaker, ease of setup and controls, a model's versatility, evaluating the presence or lack of features, and more. About the scores, the median was 53, the range was 40 to 74. The leader of the pack was Google Home Max with Google's digital assistant for $400, 74 overall score. Excellent value. Sonos One with Alexa, Amazon's digital assistant for $200, that's 63 overall score. And easy for Apple users, Apple's HomePod with Siri, Apple's digital assistant for $350, 57 overall score. large tablets 9 inches and up. We tested 35 models. We tested for overall performance, quality display, camera image, quality of battery of life, convenience of buttons, app use, touchscreens, and more. Median score was 72. Average range was 62 to 82. The best overall was considered to be the Samsung Galaxy Tab 53 9.7 screen. 4G, 32 gigabytes, 4 gigabytes of RAM. $550, score to 82. Speed Demon. Apple iPad Pro 10.5, 4 gigabytes, 64 gigabytes, 4 gigabytes of RAM, $780, scored an 80. And bargain buy, but Wi-Fi only, the Nova Tab 4 10, plus TB-X704, 16 gigabytes, 3 gigabytes of RAM, $280, scored a 74, which is pretty good. Though you can have different carriers, should I get a data plan for my tablet from my cell phone carrier, or should I shop around? Though you can have different carriers for your phone and tablet, it's more convenient to have one bill instead of two. Beyond that, using a single carrier may save you money. Carriers then offer discounted bundles, so you may want to wait for your next phone upgrade to see whether you can score a combo deal. But tablets are typically locked into a specific character, says Annette Anasadello, who leads tablet testing for CR. So if you have your heart set on the 4G Samsung Galaxy Tab S3 above, but aren't a Verizon customer, you'll have to assess whether you want to switch or keep two separate carrier bills. Also, consider Wi-Fi only options, which are almost always the most affordable choice. And what else are they testing? How about small and mid-sized countertop microwaves? We tested 34 models. We test for speed and evenness of heating, defrosting evenness, usable capacity, microwaving noise, ease of use, and more. About the scores, the median was 57, a range was 45 to 72. The top-notch defroster was LG LCS 1112 ST, $140, scored to 72. Fitzmore Food was the Avanti MO1250T, $130, that scored to 72 as well. And perfectly petite, the Sharp SBSE 710BBBW, $80. That scored a 60. How about workout headphones? We tested 39 models. We test for sound quality, including tonal accuracy, clarity, detail, and more. Design of the headphones, including how they sit around the ear and more. Median was 66 on the scores, range from 21 to 80. The winner for the wireless was the Bose SoundSport Wireless for $150, 76 overall score. The no-sweat price, the Shoshi SportFlex 3 at $20, 76 overall score, same as the Bose. Long-lasting charge, 10 hours, Optima New Force BE Sport 3 at $70, that scored a 66. How about action camcorders? We tested 21 models. They tested for picture quality of filmed images, ease of use, including controls and displays, audio quality and accuracy using the built-in microphone, and more. The median, about the scores, the median was 60, the range was 36 to 67. The super stable Sony HDR AS50 at $190 scored at 67. Hands-free functionality, the GoPro Hero Black 250, 63 overall score. And the budget buddy, Vivitar DVR 4K at $125, 58 overall score. How about whole bean coffee? We tested 14 Ethiopian products. We test for intensity of flavor and aroma, plus fruit, floral, and other notes, as well as mouthfeel. We also evaluate cost per cup and per pound. About the scores, the median was 68, the range was 50 to 84. Vibrant and best overall is La Colombe Ethiopia Yerga Z, $15 for 12 ounces. The overall score was 84. Light and tangy, birch coffee from Ethiopia Yerga Kashefe, $17 for 12 ounces. Ooh, 74 on that. The best value in darker roast is Trader Joe's Organic Fair Tree Shade Grown Ethiopian, $10 for 13 ounces, and that scored a 70. Ask our experts. Is it important to use mildew-resistant paint in my bathroom? Mildew is a type of mold that thrives in moist places, so you're right to be thinking about it when you paint your bathroom. Using a mildew-resistant paint can keep growth at bay, especially on the shower ceiling. Moisture from showering collects and they may soak into a room's paint, says Rico DePaz, a chemist and engineer who runs CR's paint tests. Paints that are resistant to mildew not only resist water absorption by forming an impenetrable paint film, but also contain fungicides that kill mildew spores before they can grow at all. You don't need to spend much more for paint that can fight off those fungi. One of our top scorers, Behr Premium Plus Enamel at $28 per gallon, available at Home Depot, or head to Ace Hardware for a can of Clark Kensington Enamel, $32 per gallon, or to Lowe's for Valspar Reserve at $44 per gallon. All three leave a smooth surface and stand up to scrubbing. We also advise a satin or semi-gloss finish, says LaPaz. They're less likely to trap mold and easier to clean than flat or eggshell finishes. These paints can also work well elsewhere. See a laundry room you'll love, which we're going to look at later. Do I need to inventory every item I own in the event of a house fire? The more detail about your belongings that you can relay to an insurance adjuster, the more you stand to recover from your claim, says Toby Stanger, a CR senior money editor. Focus first on the big and valuable. Major appliances, jewelry, furniture, rugs, electronics, and art are collectibles. Using your smartphone's video feature, sweep the camera around the room, narrating the description of items you're filming, and if you remember what you paid. Photograph receipts if you have them. Capture serial numbers and brand names when possible so the insurer can replace what you had with exact or similar items. Once you've cataloged the pricier items, then open cabinets, drawers, closets, and boxes and do the same. But don't sweat the small stuff too much. An adjuster is likely to create a bulk estimate of those things. For example, $200 for everything in your utility closet, Stanger says. Store the images and video on a cloud server such as iCloud or OneDrive, or put it in a thumb drive and stash it in a safe deposit box or fireproof safe. Several insurers even offer free web-based inventory storage tools and apps. American Families Insurance Dream Vault, for instance, lets anyone create a digital inventory. It's available online or as an Android and iOS app. And with that, we've just about run out of time for today's broadcast of the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. We would like to thank all of our past sponsors for their generous contributions to the Reading Service. If you have any comments or questions or would like to be a sponsor, please call us at 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. So long until next time, and thanks so much for listening.